This is Banned Books Week, when libraries and civil rights groups celebrate the freedom to read. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, September 26th. We will talk about the most challenged books in the past year, why the books were considered controversial, and what we should do instead if we find books objectionable. And we'll welcome your questions for our guest from the Wisconsin ACLU. And we'll wonder if you have ever read a banned book. What's your favorite banned or challenged book? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Emilio De Torre, Director of Youth and Youth and Programs at the American Civil Liberties Union. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks a lot for being with us. So it's the Children and Programs at the American Civil Liberties Union of Wisconsin?
It's Youth and Programs at the ACLU of Wisconsin.
Okay. Well, why do we observe Banned Books Week?
This started in 1982 by the American Library Association to really draw attention to the national challenges that seem to be occurring with more and more frequency. It's funny. It takes place in libraries. It takes place in schools, and it seems to be insidious. It's in history. It's not just in English. A little known fact about what was going on with banning during Reagan era: they even attempted to pass legislation to ban Playboy being published in Braille.
Well, you say this is happening with more and more frequency.
Well, it certainly was in the 80s. Now it seems to be getting a little more laughable. So, for example, the number one challenged book for this year, according to the ALA, is Captain Underpants and the Perilous Plot of Professor Poopy Pants. And even just the fact that you've given me the permission to say this on air has made my entire week.
Well, mine too. No, why? So what? Some parents think that this is objectionable to talk about poopy pants.
Yes, it's cited for offensive language and violence, and it's a graphic novel, and I think there's new attention drawn to graphic novels as literature this year. There's a heightened focus on it, but I suppose saying poopy pants can be subversive.
My goodness. Yeah, so it was the book called Captain Underpants was the most challenged book of 2013. This is the second year in a row for that.
Yes, it's trying to establish a record. And there are some really interesting books that have been challenged and banned. You've got Charlotte's Web was challenged in Kansas, and Animal Farm, too. Charlotte's Web was challenged because animals speak, and the people felt that animals are speaking because they're possessed by the devil, and therefore a kid shouldn't be subjected to that. There's a couple of Where's Waldo's on the list. It's impressive. And this is in addition to classics. I'm sure that many of us have read, Beloved, Brave New World, Color Purple, Harry Potter.
Yeah, well, what's wrong with trying to pull offensive material from library shelves?
Well, it's big and it gets complicated. There are three basic issues that you can take a look at. It's usually a small group of individuals or parents or community members. Sometimes we don't even have children in the school district. For example, I can later on tell you a little bit about what occurred in West Bend back in 2009. But it's attempting to censor ideas, history, concepts. It attempts to remove parenting from the parents. It's a few parents that are attempting to say, look, I don't find that my child is ready for this, therefore no children here are ready for this, and I'm going to make that decision for you, parents. And it's also removing an opportunity for instructors, for librarians, and for parents to use this literature as a framework to discuss more complex issues. So if it's, for example, what occurred this year in Flushing, Queens, where I grew up, PS 201, they wanted to not allow, a few teachers wanted to remove Malcolm X from being studied during Black History Month because they felt that he was too controversial a figure and he would encourage violence. And rather than have children use this with their parents and other teachers as an opportunity to explore and talk about history, they'd just rather remove it from the table entirely. Yeah. That's not acceptable.
So what should parents do instead?
Well, I think there are a few things. I really believe, as do many people, it's not just about me, that this is a golden opportunity for parents to begin to discuss complex issues with their children. So if the issues are focusing on substance abuse or peer pressure or opposing viewpoints to something that that family has, this is an opportunity for the parents to read the book and get a little more involved in their children's lives, to discuss this, to explore it. If it's like when people have attempted to remove books about the development of the human body or human growth and sexuality, your child is not going to just gloss over puberty and come out on the other end because you don't want to look at it because it makes you feel uncomfortable. We're missing an opportunity, or we're trying to deny people an opportunity to have a stronger, more nurturing hand in the development of our children. That's not going to have a good result.
What generally happens when a book is challenged?
Well, there are a few things. For example, recently in August, Waukesha has an interesting example. So a parent may introduce this, and I'm just going to use a school example. A parent may introduce a book and say, hey, look, I noticed this was on a list. I think it should be off the list. I don't think children should read this. And they may bring it to the attention of the teacher or the principal. And then generally, the school or the school district will have a vehicle in place for examining that. So Waukesha had a consideration committee, and they took a look at Looking for Alaska, which they didn't want their children looking at, Looking for Alaska. And that was deemed to be age-appropriate and had been evaluated by professionals across the country from the American Library Association. And so they disagreed. And that can be then petitioned and taken to the school board for further review. And this is another example of, rather than, you know, individuals trying to have their children opt out from reading that story, they wanted the entire school body to opt out from this book.
Yeah, that.
So there is generally a petition process, and you can negotiate or speak with a.
Oh, you got an alarm going on or something there.
Yes, I just ran over and threw that into my bedroom. We'll just ignore that.
Someone's calling you because they hear you on the radio.
I hear you on the radio.
So Looking for Alaska, that case in Waukesha, the school district committee rejected the parents' request.
Correct.
Yeah, and the parents thought that that book glorified profanity, drug and alcohol use, and sex. So it dealt with those issues, it was glorifying it?
Yes, and we just had a banned book celebration, our seventh annual one. We do it in conjunction with a variety of groups here in Milwaukee. It's a costume party. We have we usually try to have an author, Woodland Patton, who does this in partnership with us, finds authors who have been challenged. So this year we had Larry Waters reading from Montana, 1948. And I asked the audience... meanwhile, I'm dressed up as a bishop from Boccaccio's Decameron. I asked the audience who had read Looking for Alaska, and I read the quotes that we pulled from the headlines. And it just wasn't true. And Larry Waters had also mentioned how very frequently people attempt or challenge books based on misinformation. And the scenes with alcohol in Looking for Alaska had kids experimenting with alcohol and getting sick. And there were no issues of gang rape and the other things that were asserted in the media. So the parents that were in that room that had read that book were all shocked by the assertions that this book should be removed. And there is a wonderful quote I found online from a mother from that school district. I'll find it later. I'm not sure where exactly I put it. Oh, here it is. She had mentioned how her son had read another book called The Fault in Our Stars, and then they had gone to the store and they picked up Looking for Alaska, And towards the end of her quote, she says, you know, while sexual matters are casual, which I do not agree with, the emotional aspects of these teens, both book characters and real life, are what concern me most, making our discussion even more valuable. This book, which made her son feel uncomfortable, by the way, is still on my son's bookshelf and will remain there for as long as it wants, as we want it to be. I do not recommend it be removed from schools or libraries either. Parents, be parents and know what your kids are doing, reading, eating, etc., while still leaving them room to grow. And I thought the quote was particularly poignant because she talked about in the beginning how this was an opportunity for her and her 14-year-old son to begin having discussions and for her to begin providing guidance for him as he will invariably come in contact with many issues mentioned in the books, peer pressure, discomfort, kids doing things that you as a parent don't want your own child to do. And she was grateful for that opportunity, it seems.
We are talking with Emilio De Torre. He is Director of Youth and Programs at the American Civil Liberties Union of Wisconsin, which is involved with Banned Books Week, which is this week, celebrating the freedom to read. And we're wondering if you've ever read a banned book. Do you have a favorite banned book? Do you think that there is any legitimate reason to pull a book from a library shelf or a school shelf? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Which books get challenged or banned in the United States and in Wisconsin, and why? We are talking with our guest about some of the common reasons books are challenged and why he thinks there are better ways to deal with books that might have material that some find objectionable. We are talking with Emilio De Torre. He is Director of Youth and Programs at the American Civil Liberties Union of Wisconsin. In honor of the freedom to read, libraries around the country are celebrating Banned Books Week this week, and we're talking about banned books and welcoming your questions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So, Emilio, what were you doing for Banned Books Week this week?
Well, Banned Books Week is kind of like a little mini September holiday for us, and we have a costume party, a banned book celebration that we've done in conjunction with different folks around the state. In Milwaukee, we do it with Woodland Pattern Bookstore and Wisconsin Center for the Book. We've also done this with the Cooperative Children's Book Center out there by you, UW-Madison, UW-Milwaukee. And it's a celebration. We have a read-in. We have different folks from the community get together and choose passages from some of their favorite banned books. And it's a costume party where people are invited and get prizes to dress as characters from their favorite banned books or authors. And, you know, even great comic stores in the area like Lost World of Wonder have donate to this and donate gift certificates and books because they have a vested interest, too. In the tail end of the 1950s, Frederick Wortham was trying to censor comics, saying that they turned children into communists and delinquents and all sorts of other exciting things. So we get together and we remember that, and we celebrate the ridiculous, and we celebrate the opportunity to have freedom to read and to have democratic discourse over these things. It's great. Oh, just a caveat, one of the things I learned when I was first getting on Twitter is that save the date for Banned Books Week. You shouldn't abbreviate save the date STD, and you shouldn't abbreviate Banned Books Week BBW. You get a completely different clientele coming.
I'll remember that. Bill from Lancaster asks, does Emilio think a book such as The Anarchist... Is that right?
The Anarchist Cookbook?
Yeah, yeah. It should be in schools. Some background, he writes, book contains instructions for the manufacture of explosives, illicit drugs, and other things.
Well, You know, I do remember, I haven't seen that in a long time, and I'm not sure how up-to-date it is anymore. That was certainly circulated around my all-boys Catholic high school back in the 80s. I don't know what its teaching ability is. The books we're referring to specifically are books that have been approved by the American Library Association that have educational value. If this is certainly something that's selected to be a meaningful part of the curriculum by the principal and by the teachers, then that's something that I think that community needs to come together and examine. It's not really for me, Emilio, to determine what's in your libraries and what's in your schools. It's for certified professionals to do this.
Yeah. Are you most concerned about the books that are at a public school library or a public library in a community or that deal with children? Or is it, what about the attempt? I think it was in some Wisconsin libraries just did not buy 50 Shades of Grey, saying that maybe there are better books out there to buy.
It's definitely a complex issue. There's always the power of the purse and whether or not things have been censored through omission. And yes, that's something where the people need to get together and from that community and explore it. So when you had folks back in 2009 attempting to censor and remove and even with calls to burn books in West Bend in 2009.
What did they want to burn?
Oh, they had a whole list of books. Off the top, I can only remember Baby Bebop and Perks of Being a Wallflower and Geography Club. I know that there are others. I think Our Body, Ourselves might have been on that list too. And that's been challenged since the 70s. And folks got together. West Bend Parents for Free Speech got together, led by a concerned mom in the area, Maria Hanrahan. And many, many, many people came forward. And this isn't just... You know, I know all too frequently in Wisconsin nowadays it becomes bipartisan sporting event and people line up based on what side of the aisle they support. But I was impressed by how many folks came and declared where they stood politically or where they were on a religious spectrum and how they were against the censoring of speech and how it's really up to the parents and the adults to choose what they want to read and not a small group of folks. And sometimes this gets very... racialized. It's not just about children. You know, if you take a look at what's happening in Arizona, the same year that they passed the SB 1070, the Show Me Your Papers law, where I can approach you on the street and because I think you're undocumented, because you might be a darker shade than me, I want you to prove to me there that you are a citizen. They also slapped in this HB 2281, which banned Mexican American studies. And this is, right there, it seems painfully obvious that it's becoming racialized. They didn't want folks reading things like Sandra Cisneros or even our own Milwaukee hero, Bob Peterson's. He edited the Rethinking Columbus, which we used in New York City back in the early 2000s. And these are all being scrapped. And this caused an outrage around the country. I mean, people created Libro Traficantes, not Narco Traficantes, but Libro Traficantes, to bring books in to make sure that folks had an opportunity to learn about their culture and their community. And you know, tied to that, there have been more recent battles in Texas over the same subject, with a school principal even going so far as to try to make it against the rules for children and staff to speak Spanish in classrooms or in the school. Now, yes, that principal subsequently got fired, but it kind of foments a racialization of censorship. And so it goes from just, you know, the silly or, oh, I believe this is a controversial idea and my child's not ready for it, to a wholesale blanket censoring of an entire people and a culture.
Yeah, let's take another call. Rochelle in Onalaska is with us. Hi, Rochelle.
Hello.
Yeah, what's your question?
Well, my question is my middle school daughter, she's a seventh grader this year. She just recently brought a book home from the school library, and she was reading a little bit of it to me, and she told me that that there was the F word in it, and I'm like, oh, geez, I don't know if that's appropriate for the middle school library to have that book on the shelves, and I kind of wondered if, you know, I should call up to the school and mention it to the librarian, or just let it be. I mean, kids hear the F word all the time nowadays on movies and whatnot, but yeah. I just wasn't sure. And of course, she's, you know, she was appalled, and she said, "Don't you dare, Mom. No, don't do that."
We have just a minute, Emilio. What about the F word in a book for a middle schooler?
Well, Mom's got the right answer. If schools flourish because they're dynamic and we keep involved, and schools are begging parents to get involved with PTAs and volunteering, and I'm sure the librarian would be happy to know that you picked up on this and bring it to her attention. Maybe she can explain why it's there, or why it might be important, or in what context this is. Obviously, and also as a parent, you know, you want to do it discreetly so that you don't mortify your child, but... sure, I don't think it's important for us to be involved in our children's education. You want to make sure that your child is receiving a quality education, and you want to make sure that, you know, that they're going to continue to not be intimidated and get what they need to be successful and flourish. So definitely call and find out.
We are talking about Banned Books Week with our guest Emilio De Torre, who is Director of Youth and Programs at the American Civil Liberties Union of Wisconsin. And we're welcoming your questions after we check the news. A lot of classic books have been challenged or banned over the years, taken off library shelves. We are talking about the most challenged books, in this past year. Why in the world would Captain Underpants be the number one most challenged book of the past year? And we're wondering if you have a favorite banned book. This week, libraries around the country are holding events to commemorate Banned Books Week. And we are welcoming your thoughts and questions about why people challenge books and try to ban books. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 7:37 on this Friday, September 26th, and we have open lines for you. Are you not concerned about this issue? Do you have a favorite banned book? Do you have a question for our guest? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Emilio De Torre. He is Director of Youth and Programs at the American Civil Liberties Union of Wisconsin. Karen on Facebook writes, "Recently I reread Ulysses by James Joyce and Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. If they're banned, I figure they might be pretty good." That's pretty funny. So To Kill a Mockingbird is challenged or banned. Do you know why?
I don't recall why. A couple of years ago, that became a popular drink that's served in bars to celebrate Banned Books Week. They have Tequila Mockingbird. They also have the Fahrenheit 151 instead of Fahrenheit 451. There's a variety of other ones there, too. George and the Giant Peach Schnapps. I don't recall why. So many of these books are challenged, and you run through so many titles that after a while it just kind of blurs together.
But it is pretty amazing that on the list of these banned books over the years, that these are... You know, these are classics that are on there.
Oh, I'm looking at, we printed out a couple of thousand I Read Banned Books bookmarks, and I'm happy to send them to anybody that requests them. And the printed are the bindings of many classics. You've got Gone with the Wind, As I Lay Dying, Ulysses, To Kill a Mockingbird, Slaughterhouse-Five, you know, Of Mice and Men, Native Son, Lord of the Flies. My children... all of my children have read banned books. They've all read Captain Underpants. My oldest son is a big fan of the Rick Riordan series, The Lightning Thief, and there's the Theodosia mysteries, and even just comic books. I mean, Spider-Man, Bone, Dragon Ball Z. And yes, you know, maybe Dragon Ball Z isn't a literary pillar, but this is something that, you know, the last three generations, at least here in the U.S., have grown up with.
Yeah, Don tweets, Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, the best banned book ever. And that was because of, I guess, language that was considered racial slurs were used in that book. Wasn't that why it was banned?
Yes, I think that and Tom Sawyer floating around in there, and that's exactly it. Sometimes people are attempting to ban books in an effort to be sensitive and considerate, and I'm putting those two words in italics, hard to see on the radio. But then we miss an opportunity. Then we're whitewashing history. We're missing an opportunity to talk about all those skeletons in the closet, all those things that we've done that aren't good that we need to examine and make sure it don't happen again, and take an accurate snapshot, or hopefully an accurate snapshot of what our yesterdays look like here. And if we just pretend they didn't exist or remove them from conversation, then what's to prevent us from doing, you know, atrocities like slavery again in the future?
Let's go back to the phones, and now we have full lines. Paul in Baraboo is with us. Hi, Paul.
Good morning, Joyce. My comment is I thought it was very hypocritical for the National Education Association at their recent national meeting to ban books that they felt were not friendly to gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual people. And it was at all levels. It wasn't just, you know, a grammar school book or whatever. And here is an education association, and they want to ban books.
Are you aware of this, Emilio?
That's the first I've heard of it. I'm curious to find out more. I didn't hear about the NEA banning books. So if maybe he can send you a link on your Facebook page, I can take a look at it later.
Yeah, he just dropped off, so he can't. But I guess maybe that's another example if what he's saying is true, it's a group trying to remove books from libraries that perhaps they believe are, I don't know, bullying in nature to somebody, you know, casting gays and lesbians in a negative light. Would this, I don't know, I mean, what would the ACLU think about that?
Again, it's such a contextual thing. It's can you say this is bad or good? I don't know. I'd have to read about in what light and what circumstances this is occurring. Mm-hmm. Censorship in general is obviously something that the ACLU stands up against and has for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And would certainly be examined. But otherwise, this is just hypothetical. I don't know anything about this.
And we are looking it up to see if there's any news coverage of what our caller just mentioned, and we're not finding anything yet. So maybe the caller was mistaken.
Sure.
Let's go to Rebecca next in Black River Falls. Hi, Rebecca.
Hello. Good morning.
Morning.
I guess I've been working in education for almost 10 years now. I have the opportunity to bounce from grade level to grade level. So I've been in elementary, middle school, and high school. And I guess in my opinion, instead of banning books, I really think they need to consider just putting it in a different age group. Unfortunately, I work in a rural community, so most of our libraries are K-12. But I guess I'd rather have them see them break up the library into age-appropriate sections so that the elementary kids can't get some of the more intense books, I guess, for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. And I guess to consider, like, we have a lot of Bibles that I see in the books in our school district, but I never see any other religious books other than factual. So I guess I'd rather just have it be fair all across the board if they're going to have them in there.
All right. Thank you, Rebecca. What about making sure the material is age appropriate rather than, I mean, that's
a great point. And I have to say we have a fantastic Wisconsin Library Association. They do wonderful work. Madison in particular is a strong battery for this, and they have great annual conferences as well as ongoing support and training. The young adult section, the children's section, I mean, in many libraries they're separated and these books are reviewed and evaluated ahead of time. I would encourage you know, a teacher in the community that's working with the library, and I'm not sure if she was talking about the public library or her school library, to work with librarian or work and getting additional support to make sure books are sorted out appropriately. Certainly you don't want, you know, Hotel New Hampshire and The Shining in among, you know, and Tango Makes Three and Paddington Bear. You traumatize your kid. So sorting it out by age makes sense, but I know that's already done and evaluated, so I'm not sure what particular can be done.
Chris on Facebook writes, I've read a few of the banned books from the list, and I can't even see why they were banned or challenged. Context is key, and that's what's lacking.
Yeah.
People see what they don't want to see, and they think no one else should see it either. Then he goes on to say, The Simpsons has a brilliant episode about this, an episode called Marge Simpson versus Itchy and Scratchy from season two. So, have you seen that episode, Emilio?
A long time ago, yeah. That's great. I'm laughing. And those are good points that they brought up. And you know, that's part of the fun of it. When we get together for the banned book celebrations, which occurs across the country, folks take great glee in discovering why books have been challenged or banned. We had somebody dressed as from Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. And there's just tons of different books that would completely stun you. Or Where's Waldo, for example. There are two Where's Waldo books on there. And one of them is because there's this, you know, elaborate, intricate Halloween scene of all these people smiling and trick-or-treating and walking around in pumpkins, and there's a woman dressed as a witch answering the door and giving candy to smiling kids, and they wanted that pulled from the shelves because that encourages witchcraft.
Oh, my goodness. And wasn't there also a challenge to Where's Waldo because one of the photos, I don't know if I can say this on the right, that someone didn't, thought that there was a too much of a cartoon character's breast showing.
Yes, the booby on the beach picture. That's the other one, and this is hilarious. I mean, really, I don't know if the audience is familiar with the cartoon graphics of Where's Waldo or how minute this is, but it's almost like you need a jeweler's loop to look through. So, and I don't even remember if it was an actual depiction of a breast or if it was the person on the beach was laying down, and their top was untied, and there was a kid with a bucket of water about to throw it. And so it was the fear of a potential booby that had the book challenged. Because I ask you, what child has seen an exposed breast, really?
Yeah. Rick in Grafton is with us. Hello, Rick.
How you doing? It always amazes me how the minority that are not in control of their lives try to control other people's lives. But my comment is, in the electronic age, and I've used to help people with their home PCs, where kids are going, parents have no clue. And with the e-readers and the electronics and things of that nature, are you seeing the bans or concerns growing into e-books or the internet type reading?
Those are great questions, and certainly the internet is a whole different playing field for that parents really need to become versed. Just because we're older and we didn't grow up with, you know, internet fluency the way the younger generations did isn't a reason for us to not get involved, because you can see, you know, pretty much anything on the internet if you look for it. I haven't heard so much about challenges to e-readers or to reading online in a Nook or a Kindle or on your laptop. But certainly there are ways, I'm sure Rick is probably familiar if he's got a background in tech, that parents can monitor these things. If you have to make purchases, if you're linking your account to your Apple Store, your Google Play accounts, to your child's account, so you can see what it is they're accessing or purchasing or visiting the history or ensuring that your child shares passwords. And that's a whole other radio broadcast, Joy, where you can talk about internet safety and security and navigating that and how parents can stay abreast of what it is their children are doing or being exposed to on the internet.
We'll do that. And in just a moment, we will take more of your calls and questions and favorite banned books as we mark Banned Books Week with Emilio De Torre, Director of Youth and Programs at the American Civil Liberties Union of Wisconsin. What's your favorite banned book? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So what banned books have you enjoyed? Which one would you read again? Are there books that you object to that you think should be banned in schools or other libraries? And why? What questions do you have about why books are challenged and how we should deal with books that we do find objectionable? Our guest is Emilio De Torre, Director of Youth and Programs at the American Civil Liberties Union of Wisconsin. And we are talking about Banned Books Week and the freedom to read. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Stacy on Twitter asks, what about how challenged books like The Hunger Games are becoming big movies? Do controversies fade when books are made into films? What do you think of that, Emilio?
It's a fantastic question, and I think the answer is no. I mean, take a look at Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn. I mean, how many times has that been remade? Those have been TV series and movies. So you've got The Hunger Games, and that's certainly in the top 10 of challenged books. Even The Perks of Being a Wallflower was made into a movie the other year. I think or at least it seems to me, when books are challenged, it draws more attention to it, and more folks pick it up and begin to talk about it. We saw that with adults with 50 Shades of Grey. We see that with young people in these books, too. The Shakespeare. I mean, Shakespeare is a pillar of English literature and has been challenged from its inception. The same with Chaucer's Canterbury Tales. Chaucer, the man who popularized the word fart in the English language, is challenged constantly. And those are cartoons and movies. So it's a good question. I think it just draws more attention to it and hopefully will stimulate greater discourse so that people don't become afraid and try to censor and ban ideas, but rather discuss them.
Amelia, don't be surprised if you hear yourself show up on one of our promos for the show in the coming weeks, okay?
I'll be flattered.
There's been some great comments here. Let's see, who's next? We have Anise in West Salem. Hi, Anise.
Hi. Hi, Joy. Thank you. And thank you, Emilio, for coming and doing the show. I really have gathered so much information from NPR and all of its guests over the years, and I just want to make mention, I appreciate all you're doing to help keep the classics in others that are noteworthy in our system. I am concerned. I don't know if you're aware of what's been happening in Temecula, California. There's a school that, I'm wondering, do you think it will become more prominent where schools are avoiding any Christian literature? This one in particular mentioned The Hiding Place of Corey Ten Boom, and I don't know if you're aware of this book, but it's about a family that was hiding some Jews during the Holocaust, and in her stories, I know she's written other books as well. I've happened to get my hands on some, about 6 or 7, I'm sure, since then, but quite interesting reads that are part of our history. I'd hate to see disappear because of closed-mindedness.
So this is a charter school in California that's removing Christian books, Anise, and you're wondering if Emilio fears that's a trend?
Do you think it will become a trend?
Yeah.
Will the ACLU be fighting that? Why it's part of history, why it would become.
Sure, absolutely. I don't know about this specific instance, but there's certainly many books that, you can't separate the faith of the author, the faith of the characters from the books. And we would defend that in as much as we would defend any other fantastic works of literature. You've got Elie Wiesel. There's just, even Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, all of those people are for the most part, people of Christian faith whose religion is central to the telling of the tale. So, yeah, we would defend that. Now, it's very different from teaching religion. as religious instruction in public schools. That's something separate. But certainly censorship of any literature, because somebody is going the other way and is now overly sensitive that children are going to be exposed to a faith that's different from their faith, that all fits in the same purview. So sure, Anise. I don't know these particular books. I don't know the instance of the school in California. But in as much as the majority of literature is attached to that, it has explorations of what people think happen when they die, or you know, how they think they have to go about or comport themselves in their daily lives. Sure, that's all part of censorship.
Next, we go to Annalisa in Green Bay. Hi, Annalisa.
Hi. Very good program. I just wondered if you would be able to give the address where we can get the bookmark. I'd like to.
Oh, sure. It's the ACLU of Wisconsin, and it's 207 East Buffalo Street, Suite 325. Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53202. Or even easier, you can find us on Facebook, or you can shoot us an email.
Yeah, and then this is the bookmark you mentioned, that what has all of the top 10 banned books?
It's got a stack of classics on it. There are probably 20-something here. You know, Death of a Salesman, The Catcher in the Rye, Harry Potter, Howl, Gone with the Wind. And then on the back is just a little couple of blurbs on censorship and hashtag I read banned books.
Yeah.
If you shoot us an email to liberty@aclu-wi.org, it's probably your fastest way for us to turn around and send you some bookmarks.
Well, we have, unfortunately, we're out of time. A number of people wanted to share their favorite banned book, including another Huck Finn and many others. Do you have a favorite banned book, Emilio?
That's really tough. That's as hard as when people say, you know, what's your favorite food? It depends on my mood. I really enjoy reading to my children, and I know that we've read many different banned books. I love James and the Giant Peach. I really enjoy how inspired a lot of my, you know, my children get at hearing these stories. And I'm a former teacher, too. I was an English teacher in New York City. So, I can't narrow that down. That's worse than Sophie's Choice, which is on this list.
In our final minute, what is what would you like to leave our listeners with when thinking about the books that are banned or challenged?
I really want to encourage everybody to stand up for the freedom to read, you know, information to this type of access, and to use this as an opportunity to begin a difficult conversation is priceless. You know, don't repress growth and thought and censor ideas and opportunity, either for adults or for children, and just because an idea or concept makes you feel uncomfortable. Use, you know, the answer to speech is more free speech.
Thank you very much for being with us. Emilio De Torre is Director of Youth and Programs at the American Civil Liberties Union of Wisconsin, talking with us about Banned Books Week. Thanks very much to Christy Taylor, to Brianne Chasso, and Cynthia Schuster for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come, including our Week in Review. Also, a special state capitol report on Monday. We will begin our candidate forums for the November election with gubernatorial candidates. We will hear from Democrat Mary Burke after 7:30 on Monday.